In Haiti was I born as a slave. More than 150 years in the past, with a power I do not fully understand. I am known as Jean-Pierre Desperrois, and Destiny, she calls my name. Chapter 9, De Grey. The air around us glows with a heaviness like a wall of swirling gray. As I step into the fog, it is warm and wet on my body, a strong difference from the coolness and dryness of the cave, as if I've stepped not into a fog, but into some substance of much strangeness. This sensation, it is one that I do not anticipate. I expect also to hear the sound of the crickets, the sound of the jungle at night, but the only sound is the sound of our feet crunching against the floor of the forest. I look down, but the fog is too heavy. I cannot to see my feet. There is a stench in the fog, a stink to overwhelm. The smell of sulfur. I've smelled this smell many times recently, no? But now it is stronger than ever, this smell of rotten egg. I cannot but to help myself. I pull back toward the cave, but Isabel, she tightens her grip on my hand, and with a strength I have not felt before in a woman, she forces me to walk. I take a breath to ask her where she is to take me, but Isabel, she glares at me and she shakes her head. I am not to talk. We walk through the heavy emptiness a long time in silence. The glow of the lamp must be visible to anyone looking toward us through the gray. I call it the gray, not the fog, for it is unlike any fog I have ever encountered. And is it strange to say that I am a man who knows fog? Is there someone out there watching us? The voice inside of me tells me that there is, but not just someone. Many. Our footsteps, they continue to crunch on the ground for what feels like a long, long time. The gray only seems to get more heavy. Ahead of us is now a low sound of rumbling. No, it is not rumbling. It is the sound of a growl. The growl of a dog, perhaps? No, of several dogs. The sound grows more loud as we continue to walk. We walk directly toward a pack of growling dogs. I cannot see them, I can only hear them. I've never heard dogs growl at a pitch so low. They're big dogs. I want to stop our walking, but Isabel, she does not seem to notice. The dogs, if that is what they are, cannot be far ahead of us now. We keep to walk. Isabel acts as if she can see through the gray, but for me, there is only the glow of the lamp, the wet gray, and this sound that makes my hair to stand on end, this sound that is only coming closer as we walk, this sound of low growling. Isabel, she walks as if there is no danger. The palm of my hand holding her hand is wet with sweat. I expect at any moment one of the dogs to leap upon me. That is how close the sound is. I long to ask her, where are these dogs and would they bite? But I am certain that the sound of my voice would only lead to an attack. Isabel, She continues to walk as if I am no longer by her side. I must walk faster to keep up with her. Her hand, it no longer holds mine with tightness. It does not hold at all. If I loosen my grip, her hand would slip away and she would disappear into the gray. I am in no mood to find out what would be the consequence of letting her hand to go. So I hold her hand more tightly and I walk with her faster. The sound of a howl penetrates the gray. I cannot tell from where the howl comes. It is as if the howl, it is all around us. And I have never heard a dog howl like this before. It is not the sound of a dog. It is the sound of a wolf. There are no wolves in Haiti. How can a wolf be here in Haiti? Now the sound of the dogs or the wolves, it has stopped. And this makes my nerves to grow even more tense, if this is possible. Isabel, she stops her walking. Now, as if from nowhere, the gray reveals a small hut made of thatch before us. The gray is of such heaviness that the hut, it appears to float in the middle of the air. The doorway is lower than my head by several inches. A light, it glows from inside the entrance. Isabel, she does not say a word, but she points with her free hand toward the door. I duck my head to enter. She is right behind me. The air inside, it is not wet at all, it is dry. The temperature inside, it is perfect, neither hot nor cold. The room inside the hut looks bigger than it seemed from the outside. The walls are covered in white mud or plaster with dark brown wooden posts from floor to ceiling every few feet. The ceiling, it is held up by heavy wooden beams. Between each of the posts, about 5 feet from the floor, sticks out a sconce with a torch. The room is bright from the flames. At the center of the room, a poteau-mitain rises from the floor to the ceiling. It is painted in bright colors. Letters of a language I do not recognize spell words I do not know from the top to the bottom of the pole. Smears of powder are all that remain of the vives that have been drawn at its base. Smears of dark brown are what is left of the sacrifices. Is this the place at which the sacrifice of last night was performed? What animal was it then that screams so loud and leaves so little blood? Across the room, reclined in a large chair of much ornateness that I must presume was stolen from one of the plantations, in this chair reclines the poisoner himself, Macandal. The chair is gilt with gold leaf, ornate with carvings of plants and of birds. Its cushions are made from the fabric of red velvet. Macandal, he leans an elbow against one of the carved arms. One foot rests on the cushion, the other leg, it dangles towards the floor. He is dressed in his loose robe, like the white one I have seen him to wear before. But this robe, it is red, scarlet. There is no other furniture. No one else but the three of us in the room. "Welcome," says Macandal with his gentle smile. "Welcome, Jean-Pierre. Thank you for joining me. It is good to see that you have regained your health." I am not certain how to respond to this greeting, so I say nothing. Isabel, she shoves me from behind, and I stumble from the doorway a few feet into the light.
"Isabel tells me you wish to be initiated into my group,"
says Macandal. "This is true," I say.
Why?
He says. It is a good question. I have not given any thought to the answer, but I know that I should not answer with hesitation. I wish to free the slaves of AD, I say.
Don't we all?
Says Macandal. He smiles more broadly.
Sit, Jean-Pierre. Sit. Near me.
He waves his hand to his right, my left, with a certain lightness of touch, and I see a small, simple, wooden, white-painted chair against the wall. How did I not see this chair before? I walk to it, I pick it up, and I plant it a few feet away from the throne of Macandal. I sit. The chair. It is too small for me. I would prefer to stand, but there is something about this man that makes me to do as he wishes. Macandal, sitting in his throne, he looms large before me. I realize that he wants to loom large before me. He leans toward me a little.
Now, Jean-Pierre, please do me the favor of telling me from where you come.
I have told you, I say, the Plantation de la Cour. He smiles.
Indeed, you have told me this. But I am sure Isabel has told you that I do not believe you.
How else would I have the mark of the plantation burned into my leg?
It is not hard to burn a man's leg,
says Macandal, continuing to smile. This is true, I say, but I have carried this scar from my birth. If I had burned myself more recently to now, this scar would not be healed in this way, no?
And therein lies the mystery, doesn't it, monsieur?
I do not answer.
Who sent you?
He says. This question, it is such a surprise that I do not find the words to answer.
What?
I say.
Who sent you?
No one sent me.
You are clearly a spy, monsieur. This is the only conclusion I can draw,
he says. He says it with such gentleness that it leaves me in a state of much confusion.
You were left in the box as bait for us. Now that you are here, you already know too much. I cannot allow you to go back to your masters. Even dead, you would reveal too much to them.
His smile drops, and he shakes his head with sadness, with pity. Like the pity of Isabel this day earlier, I do not like this pity. Who is this man that he pities me? And now I notice the kubasa in his hand. No one sent me, I say. I come of my own accord.
Why, then?
To meet you? He laughs. You are Macandal. You are the poisoner, I say. I'm a slave. That is why I'm here.
I'm going to ask you only one last time,
he says. The light gleams off the polished edge of his kubasa. The smile is back on his face. He leans closer to me. I can see that the pupils of his eyes are very small. Too small for the light in the room, no? This man, he has been drinking some of his own potions, no? He waves his kubasa between us, catching my gaze with its reflection of torchlight. I cannot help myself, I flinch backward. But this knife of his, it does not try to cut. Instead, it flutters before me for a moment like a gleaming butterfly or moth. Then, it is gone. Macandal lowers the knife. His eyes catch mine again. It is like looking into deep pools of water, like the ocean. I cannot to pull myself away from them, even if I try. Why would I want to try? These eyes, they are very compelling, very beautiful. I look at them more deeply.
Now, Jean-Pierre, if I am to help you, you must help me,
he says. He still smiles, and his voice takes on a quality of more gentleness, if this is even at all possible.
Tell me the truth. From where do you come?
From when? I say. It takes me by surprise, but now I realize that I want to tell them. Why did I not tell them already? That would have made things so much easier for me. I would already be initiated now. Perhaps with my help, the slaves of A.D. would already be free now. Why did I not trust him before this Machinal? I've been a fool. Such a fool. Of course, it is all so clear to me now. I must tell him everything. And I do.
You have been listening to Salt, the Lives and Times of Jean-Pierre Desperrois. I'm Jason Newlander, and I wrote and narrated the story. Buzz Moran produced this recording. Music by Adrian Quesada. There's more to Jean-Pierre Desperrois at theintergalacticnemesis.com. Salt is part of the One of Us podcast network.